All right, good afternoon, everyone. Let's begin. So for our last session for today, we're focusing on honor thy father and mother, caring for aging parents, respect and dignity. So generally, you know, when we come to this topic, which is a very important topic, we generally tend to focus on specific, like, end-of-life issues, which, of course, are complicated and filled with, a variety of different issues, both halachic as well as hashkafic, that often focus on the definition of end of life. Do we subscribe to a cardiac definition of death, a brainstem definition of death? I don't really want to cover that so much, except I would just tell you two things. Number one, it's important to become well-read on these issues. And it's important to become well-read before you have to deal with them, because hospital settings, you know, for example, most hospitals subscribe to a brainstem death criteria, the Harvard criteria. If you do not subscribe to that, as many Orthodox Jews do not, it's often an uphill battle in the healthcare system. You have to be very well informed. In the Maryland legislature right now, there is a bill regarding physician-assisted suicide. The climate is changing. The climate is changing. When it comes to end-of-life issues, if you want to go ahead and ensure that either your own end-of-life issues or a parent or a loved one's end-of-life issues are taken care of in accordance with halacha, you must become knowledgeable on these issues. Things like a halachic living will that go ahead and outline your wants and wishes for end-of-life care are an absolute must. The same way that we must have life insurance, and the same way that we must have a will, is the same way that we must have a halachic will as well. Because a lot of times, you know, it's kind of like the halachos of mourning, like the halachos of Shiva. No one learns the halachos of mourning until when? Until you have to. That's fine, because you can get a book, and in a couple of minutes, you can become pretty well-versed on the halachos of mourning. But when it comes to end-of-life care, whether it's your own or caring for a loved one, there's often such a flurry of activity that if you try to learn on the job, it's going to be exceptionally, exceptionally difficult. And there are a lot of misconceptions. Like, for example, halacha does not always require you to do anything and everything at all times. It's a very significant misconception in halachic Judaism that when someone is dying, you have to do everything to extend life. That is not true. There are many circumstances where heroic measures are not required in halachic care. There are many circumstances where they are. But again, it's important to become at least knowledgeable about these circumstances. It's important to become knowledgeable about these topics. And most importantly, it's important to have a Rav who you could consult with, who could help guide you both on the filling out of a halachic living will. And there are different forms of halachic living wills. As well as just, again, what the issues. It's always good. The beautiful thing about Judaism is it's not like we have a Torah that's known by just a couple of people and everyone else has to, you know, hear the whispers in the back. Me'acharya pargud. You know, halacha, Jewish law, is accessible to everyone and to anyone. And because it is, it's incredibly important just to become well-versed, not when you're sitting in a hospital room, but beforehand, just to know again, sometimes, you know, we have such an aversion to dealing with death before we have to. And as a result, we often find ourselves unprepared to deal with death. There is no stigma attached to death for one simple reason. We're all going to die. And I don't mean that as a downer. I just mean it as a reality. Halavai, we should all enjoy incredible longevity. I've never asked him shanim tovos. But at the end of the day, that's what happens. Remember, again, very important idea. You know, we often think that mortality is part of the curse of Adam HaRishon. The Ramban points out, the other Mepharshim points this out as well, mortality was always part of the equation. We were always supposed to die. Right? Why? How do you know we're always supposed to die? Because what would life look like if you were immortal? What would your garage look like if you were immortal? Right? Imagine for a moment, right? Now, we know we die. We know we die. And look at all the things that we kick down the road. All the cans we kick down. Because, no, tomorrow. Can you imagine if we were immortal? There would be absolutely no impetus to do anything. Because if I don't get to it this century, I'll get to it next century. Mortality is the greatest blessing. Because mortality is HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us you've got a limited amount of time. You know it's even a greater blessing? We don't even know how much time we have here in this world. That's the blessing. Because if you knew that you had 120 years, again, I could kick Moshe Rabbeinu didn't start till he was 80. Right? Rabbi Akiva, 40. There's plenty of time. No, there's not, because you don't know if you have 40 years, 80 years, 120 years, something in between. So mortality is an incredible blessing. It really is. It is the greatest catalyst for life accomplishment. But because we know we're all going to die, it behooves us to become knowledgeable about end-of-life issues. And there are raging machloksim, as I mentioned before, whether we subscribe to brainstem death or cardiac cessation. These are major issues, and we have to make our wishes known to our families, because I've seen families ripped apart, torn apart, by deciding regarding parents' end-of-care issues, because families never had a discussion. On the other hand, when people make their wishes known to their families ahead of time, they do an incredible service for their children. Because suddenly, again, my children don't have to think about what I want or how I want, because it's spelled out, maybe it's written down, or it's in a notarized document, and it's clear. It's clear everyone's on the same exact page. But I want to focus, just for the few minutes we have together, on something a little bit different. And it's an issue, I think, that comes up a lot in dealing with elderly parents. And it's the issue regarding, I'll call it, we could kind of put it all under the umbrella of mental incapacitated or mental incapacity. That could go ahead and manifest itself in a variety of different ways. Alzheimer's, dementia, other forms of mental illness, and dealing with parents who are impacted by this state of being, and how, as the caregiver, as the child, to interact with such parents and to care for such parents. So I'll tell you that one of the many, many, many beautiful things about Yiddishkeit is we have everything. The answer to everything and anything is contained in our Torah. Maybe not the Chumash, could be in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in Chazal, but every issue is addressed. You just have to know where to look for it. So I'll tell you an amazing Gemara. The Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, 31b, deals with the following situation. Ravasi habile hayi ima zekena. Ravasi had an elderly mother. But and what happens? She said to him, so his mother, who apparently was, sounds like she was widowed. She was not married, widowed, divorced. No, she was widowed. She was alone. So she relied very heavily on her son Ravasi. And she said to him, bo'ino tachshitin. She said, I want you to get me jewelry. I don't have a husband. I'm not going to buy it myself. I want you to get me jewelry. Fine. Avadla. Mother, of course, I'll get you jewelry. Bo'inon gavra, I want you to find me a shidduch. This is what she's saying to her son. Fine. Na'ayin lach, mom, I'll look into it for you. Bo'inon gavra the shapir kavaseich. I want the young man, a young man, as handsome as you. Shafka v'azala arad Yisrael. Vasi ran away, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So a very, 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 Ravasi's living in Bala, living in Babylonia. He goes and he runs away to Eretz Yisrael after this interaction with his mother. So this Gemara is incredibly enigmatic, because again, we don't know what's happening. What we do know over here is that the Gemara goes out of its way to tell us that Ravasi had an Ema Zekena. She was an old woman. And what we begin to see is what happens in the progression of requests? What happens? They go from, okay, normal, to a bit outrageous. It's a bit outrageous. Jewelry, okay. A shidduch, okay. A young man as handsome as you, strange. Strange already. Something doesn't make sense. So the Rambam comments on this, and he understands that the Gemara is teaching us an incredible halacha. Rambam understands that in this case, Ravasi's mother was not of sound mind. She was not of sound mind. Now, what does this mean? Was this Alzheimer's? Was this dementia? Was this some other type of mental instability? Whatever it was, she was not mentally sound. So amazingly enough, how does Rav Asi deal with his mother who was not mentally sound? What does he do? He runs away. That doesn't exactly seem like behavior becoming of a great Tana, right? So what's happening over here? So the Rambam says something amazing. This Rambam writes, Mishenitrafa daito shel aviv v'shalimo. If a child has a parent, Nitrifa Daito literally means goes insane, but it doesn't mean insane. It just means the parent does not have proper mental capacity. So again, like I said, fill in the blank however the parent gets there. So what's the halacha? Mishtada linhog iman kifi daitam ad shiruchem aleihem. The child has to try to go ahead and take care of the parent to the best of the child's ability. Vim efshalo la'amod mipnei shenishtatesu biyoser. But if the child cannot deal with the parents, because the parent has just become too difficult. Nishtatub Yosef means literally they've become too crazy. But it's not crazy like in a pejorative way. It's mean if the child can't deal with the parent simply because it's too overwhelming. It's too taxing for the child to deal with the parent. What's the halacha? Yanichim v'yelechlo. The child could leave. V'yitzaver la'achirim la'anhigim karay lahem. And the child could appoint a proxy. The child could go ahead and appoint someone else to care for the parent in the place of the child. So this is amazing. The Rambam takes this story of Rav Asi and understands it to not just be an interesting story about family dynamics, but to be a profound halachic precedent. A child has an obligation. Remember, our topic so far for these last two shiurim has been the obligation of a child to honor parents. So the child has an obligation to honor the parent through thick and through thin. But now there's a transition. Now the care of the parent has come upon the child. So the Rambam says essentially, what happens if caring for the parent simply becomes too overwhelming for the child? Now, interestingly enough, if you notice, the paradigmatic case of parental care which becomes too overwhelming for the child is what kind of case? What kind of case? Not where the parent becomes physically dependent, but where the parent is no longer emotionally or cognitively intact. It's interesting. Things don't change all that much. It's much easier for a child to care for a parent who, let's say, is bedbound, right? Or who's suffering from a terminal illness than a parent who has dementia or Alzheimer's. Much easier, quote-unquote, for a child to care for a parent who is physically dependent than when that parent doesn't recognize even who I am, or that parent is a shell of their former self. So the Rambam understands that from what happened, why did Rav Asi pick up and leave? Why did he leave? Because he understood, I cannot care for my mother. I cannot care for her. I cannot care for her in this state. And we'll discuss why that is. And the Rambam understands that based on this, there is a halachic precedent. The halachic precedent that if you feel as a child you cannot care for your parent, you are halachically permitted to take a step back and to outsource the care of that parent to someone else. Now the Ravid disagrees on the Rambam. And the Ravid says, Ein zuhara nechon. The Rambam, you are dead wrong. Im hu yelech v'yanicholo l'mi yitzav l'shomro. That's what the Ravid says. If a child abdicates the responsibility to care for the parent, then who's going to care for the parent? Now, what does this mean? So what the Ravid is saying, something really, who's going to care for the parent? I'll hire someone. I'll get someone. The Ravid is saying something much more profound. What is the Ravid saying? What is the Ravid saying? You know, if you go into the hospital today, what's the most important thing that you need? An advocate, right? So what the Ravid is saying is, no one will ever care for your parent like you. So at the end of the day, you want to outsource it to someone else? Okay, can I find someone else to care for my parent? It's quite possible. But if the child abdicates his or her responsibility, then in reality, who is going to take care of the parent like a child? So you see this incredible stress, this incredible friction between the Rambam and the Ravid. The parent is mentally incapacitated. Rav Asi says, you know what, I can't deal with this. The Rambam says, okay, you can't deal with it. It's okay. You could take a step back. Outsource the care of your parents. So by the way, just as you, so we understand the underpinnings of this. Well, before we get to that, fine. That's Rambam. You could take a step back, outsource the care to someone else. Ravid? No, you can't. That's what Kibud Avei means. Kibud Avei means what? Even when it's difficult, you're still going to do it. And even if you're not sure how you're going to do it, you're going to figure it out. Because at the end of the day, that is the obligation that children have towards parents. So a fundamental machlokes, a fundamental dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid regarding the extent to which a child must go to care for the parent, specifically in the realm of where the parent is mentally incapacitated. So there's a variety of different opinions. Just so you understand, what's at the core of this is how you understand the story of with Rav Asi. The Rambam understands that Rav Asi acted correctly. The Ravid understands that Rav Asi acted what? Incorrectly. that Rav Asi should not have taken leave of his mother. He should have figured out ultimately again how to deal with her, despite the difficulty in her circumstances. I'll share with you something interesting. So the Shulchan Aruch, interestingly enough, paskins in this case in a very dramatic way. The Shulchan Aruch says, forget how much stuff I'm going to get into this. So this is the Shulchan Aruch. So let's focus on the Shulchan Aruch. He says, Mishan Itrafa Daito. Well, actually, let me tell you the Bach. One more piece. This is actually very interesting. The Bach, Rav Yoel Sirkis, 1561 to 1640, in his commentary on the tour, writes something very interesting. He disagrees with the premise of the case. He doesn't feel that this is talking about a case of mental illness, but rather he just understands, actually, mental illness is the wrong word. He doesn't feel that this is a case of mental incapacity. He just feels that what? This is a situation of difficult old people. Right? There's no specific classification for that. She was just a difficult old lady. That was her diagnosis. So the Bach says something amazing. He says, quotes, so the Bach says, this is actually not a case of a lack of mental capacity. This is a case of a demanding mother. This is actually very interesting. This is a case of a demanding mother. Rav Asi just felt, what's happening over here is my mother, she's fine, she's mentally intact, but she's just asking from me a variety of different things that, to be honest, I don't feel comfortable with. And I just think that the requests are going to become more and more intense as time goes on. And just to be honest, I'm just not ready to actively deal with that. So therefore, what does Rav Asi, he goes on, he says, V'lo yucha l'kayim, avami, so now listen to this, but listen to what the Bach says, what about where the parent is mentally incapacitated? What happens in that situation? Avami she'nitchef adaito, she'tzarech shmir yisira. But in a case where the parent lacks mental capacity, where the parent needs additional intervention, ein hadas nosenes, she'yanichim v'yelech lo. The Bach says, of course you cannot abandon your parent. Listen to this. So the Bach does something amazing. So this, I'll tell you what's very striking about all of this, is this entire incredible contemporary discussion, which is such a major reality for so many people, focuses on a line in Gemara, which is a story about Rav Asi. Isn't that incredible? So, and it's all about what was happening with Rav Asi's mother. So we have two competing narratives. The narrative up until now, which was the Rambam and the Ravid, was that Rav Asi's mother was mentally incapacitated. Right? Whatever it was, she just lacked what we call nitrafa daito. So the Rambam says Rav Asi did the right thing. He couldn't care for his mother. He outsourced her help to someone else. The Ravid says, Rav Asi, you did the wrong thing. You should have stayed with your mother. The Bach comes along and says, no, you guys all have it wrong. That's not the story. This is not a story about mental incapacitation. This is a story about what? A difficult lady. A difficult lady. It happens every once in a while, right? A difficult mother who is just very demanding upon her sons. Or upon her son, I should say. Yes? 1540? No, the Bach is 1540.
But the story?
No, the story is the Gemara. Gemara already, much earlier, yeah. So this is the Bach commenting on this in the late 1500s, early 1600s. So the Bach writes as follows. So the Bach says, this is a case of a difficult woman. So listen to this, this is amazing. And this kind of goes back to something we spoke a little bit about in the previous class. If you remember again, in the previous class we spoke about what happens with negative parental behaviors. Yerach HaShulchan. We spoke about abusive parents, and the fact that there's absolutely no obligation to honor abusive parents, because again, an abusive parent is a Rasha. There is no obligation to honor a parent who is a Rasha. What about a parent who has negative behaviors? Remember again, the Aruch HaShulchan said, for example, a shikr. Parent drinks a bit much. Not, doesn't get abused, but just negative behaviors. So the Aruch HaShulchan said, in that case, it's a good idea to remove yourself from the parent. What's the logic there? You see, the goal is we should honor our parents, okay? Let's say my parent is difficult or things just are not good. And I know that if I stay in proximity with the parent, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? There's going to be a clash. I don't want to clash with my parents. Why don't I want to clash? Because if I clash and I'm disrespectful, that's wrong. So sometimes halachic conventional wisdom is remove yourself. By the way, it's not just by parents. It's good conventional wisdom in life that sometimes it is. There are certain difficult circumstances that you could resolve. Those you should try to resolve. And then there are other negative circumstances you cannot resolve. And if you cannot resolve, what's the next best thing? Siluk. Remove yourself from it. Remove yourself from it. So the parent is not a healthy individual for me to have a relationship with. I don't want to disrespect. I don't want to butt heads. I don't want to clash. I'm going to remove myself from this relationship. And the removal ultimately, again, ensures, it's not, again, to be clear, the removal doesn't fix anything. What does the removal do? What does it do? It ensures that ultimately, again, there's not going to be a flare-up. I'm not going to do anything wrong. Good. The Bach says something amazing. Ravasi's mother was mentally competent. She was just a challenging personality. There are some like that. She's just the person. So what happens? Ravasi said, if I stay with my mother, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It's only a matter of time until there's a... She's going to say something that is just so ridiculous that I want to say, Mom, you're nuts. Right? Or not a direct quote, but you understand, right? It's going to be said, it's going to happen, that's kind of going to tilt the scales, and I'm going to do something I regret. So what does he choose to do? He chooses to remove himself from the circumstance. Why? Why? In order to avoid the flare-up. Now, according to the Bach, Rav Asi's removal of himself from his mother's life doesn't impact her in her day-to-day for one simple reason, which is she's able to care for herself. She's okay. She's okay. She's just a difficult lady. So she might get upset. She might get this. But Rav Asi did his cause-benefit analysis. And better for her to be upset with me because I removed myself than to stay here and to risk the flare-up. That was the cost-benefit analysis that he made. But the Bach says, had Rav Asi's mother been mentally incompetent, then what? He would have had absolutely no right to leave her. Because if you're going to leave a mentally incompetent parent by themselves, or even someone else, no one's going to care for them like a child. And he says something else. He says when the parent is mentally incompetent, you don't really have to listen to anything that they say. Rav Asi's concern was his mother was competent. She was just a little bit, what's the right word? Difficult, high maintenance, right? High maintenance. So that's where there becomes a challenging kibbutz of the aim issue, which is here, my mother is competent. She knows what she's saying. When she asked for a young, handsome husband, she knew what she was asking for. It's just ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. So that Rav Asi says, you know what? That I know where this is going. If I stay here, it's only a matter of time until there's a conflict. So just pointing out here, from one story, you have these dramatically different narratives. Is it a mentally incompetent mother? In which case, the Rambam says, yes, you see from here that if you can't handle it, you could outsource the care to someone else. The Rambam is saying, absolutely not. Rav Asi did something wrong. And in fact, you should stay there to care for the mentally incompetent mother, because if you don't, who's going to? Bach, no, she's not mentally incompetent. If she's mentally incompetent, of course you have to go in and stay there and care for her. But rather, what's the case? She's just exceedingly difficult. So because she's exceedingly difficult, therefore Rav Asi said, I have to remove myself in order not to get into a negative situation. So what do we do with this? So look what the Shulchan Aruch says. This is in number 36. I'm sorry, you don't have this. It's on the sheet that I have. Right? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, this is in Yardea Simen Resh Mem Sif Yud. Mi shenitrefa das aviv o imo. So here we go. Someone whose parent, Nebuch, you know, is not mentally sound. Not mentally sound. So what's the halacha? Mishtadel linhog imahem kefi da'atom ad shiyirucham aleihem. Now the wording over here is very important. You should try your best to care for this parent ad shiyirucham aleihem, in accordance with the depth of your empathy well. What does this mean? What this means is my goal as a child is to always love and respect and care for my parent. This unfortunately happens all the time where children try to do the right thing, but at the end of the day, they don't have the requisite tools and skills to unconditionally love their parent no matter what happens. The Shulchan Aruch is acutely aware of this. Therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, if the parent is not is you know unraveling cognitively or mentally, the child should try their best to the best of their abilities. Kafi datam, the best of their abilities, ad shirucham aleihem, while they can still have compassion on their parent. See, understand what's happening over here? What's most important? What's most important? Amazingly enough, the halacha seems to say, I have to make sure that my feelings toward my parent don't change. That I don't begin to look down on them. That I don't begin to feel negatively about them. That I don't begin to feel that they're robbing me of certain things in life, my freedom, my abilities, all things like that. So it's good to care for your parents, but know what your threshold is. This, by the way, is an interesting idea. This idea of going ahead and knowing what you're capable of. You know, this Nechama Leibowitz, Zichrona Livracha, has a piece about this by Sari Imenu. And she says, you know, Sari Imenu, after she thought she couldn't have children, so she tells Avram to take Hagar. Avram said, fine. Avram was ready to take Hagar as a pilegesh, as a concubine, not as a full-fledged wife. Sarah said, no, you should take her as a full-fledged wife. The child that you have with her, this will be your heir. So Avram takes Sarah, and what happens? Sarah has a falling out with Hagar. So Nechama Leibowitz says something amazing. It's such an incredible insight. She says, Sarah thought that she could easily invite another woman into her home and not feel animosity. That's what she thought she was capable of. But Nechama Leibowitz posits, she wasn't. She wasn't. She was a human being. And as such, again, when she saw her beloved Avraham now having a child with another, it was too much for her. Remember again, the Ramban quotes the idea of false Sarah Imenu for her mistreatment of Hagar, and in fact attributes the animosity between the sons of Hagar and the sons of Sarah, an animosity that exists to this very day between the Ishmaelim, the Arab world, and the Jewish people, to the mistreatment of Sarah of Hagar. Scary, scary thought. But there is this idea of, know what you're capable of. Know what you're capable of. So the Shulchan Aruch says you want to care for an elderly parent who is unraveling mentally or cognitively. That's beautiful. What are you capable of doing? You have to ask yourself that difficult question. A child often wants to be able to do everything for a parent, especially when there's a good relationship with a parent, especially when I feel such gratitude for my parent did to me. But I have to ask myself that difficult question. What am I really capable of doing? Right? How far does my empathy go? Because understand something. If I care for my parent and at the end of the day, I'm not nice to them, I compromise my cover to them, I'm not doing them a service. I'm doing them a disservice. At that point in time, says the Shulchan Aruch, listen what Shulchan Aruch goes on. If I cannot care for my parent because my parent has just become too mentally incapacitated, yelechlo v'anichem, you could absent yourself, you could take a step back and give over the care of your parent to others. You know, this is a grueling decision. You know, we live in an age now where Baruch Hashem, lifespans are extending and expanding. And it's amazing the issues of longevity that we didn't have to think about a generation ago. Baruch Hashem is amazing to see. But you know, it's a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword. You know, situations where people would just die, and as the poet says, go peacefully into the night, those type of situations are now prolonged, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in not such a good way, and it presents incredible challenges of long-term care for elderly parents. And sometimes it's the reflexive reaction of children, and again, especially, you know, sometimes when children and parents did not get along, these decisions are much easier, because I don't want my parents living with me. I don't want them with me. My parents doesn't want to live with me because no one likes each other. So as tragic as that is, it makes it. But when you have a situation of, you know, a harmonious family and parents took good care of children, and our children want to reciprocate and they want to be there. They want to be there. So I want my parents to come and live with me. I want my parents. But again, you have to know yourself and you have to know what's involved in that care. And the truth is, homes and facilities are difficult places to visit. They're even more difficult to see your own flesh and blood there. But sometimes that's what the parent needs. I don't mean if the parent needs it medically or things like that, but a child has to know, how will I be able to most be mechabed my parent? Am I going to grow resentful? You know, Children do grow resentful of parents when they become the caregivers. It happens. It happens all of the time. Because why? Here I was, especially for the sandwich generation, where when am I often caring for elderly parents? When am I caring for them? My own kids are out of the house. For the first time in my whole life, what do I have? Right? I have freedom and a little bit more money, right? Because maybe I finished paying off all of my tuitions, right? And maybe, I don't know, maybe some kids are working, some kids are not working. But I have freedom. Forget about the money. I have freedom for the first time. And then I have to care for an elderly parent. And I want to say it's an incredible zechus. But there's a part of me that feels a little bit resentful because my freedom has been impacted. It's important to be honest about these feelings. Because if you're not honest about them, yes.
I'm surprised about the dichotomy that's being presented. Because I understand that everybody's got their own toolbox. And some people really are not equipped to take care of a parent who's no longer competent mentally. But it's being presented by the Rebbe and the Ramban, it seems to me, and even the Shulchan Aruch, as it's either or. Whereas there is a place in the middle.
1,000%. I'm going to get to it. You're absolutely correct. It's not either I'm in or I'm out. 1,000%. What I'm just trying to do is just frame it so you understand the bookends. Then we're going to fill in the rest. You're 1,000% on target. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying a person, the caregiver, the child, almost has to do a little bit of like a cheshbon nefesh, has to be a bit introspective and ask themselves, like, what am I capable of doing? And you're saying good, which is, you know, it could be that I start out, remember, it's not an absolute. And this happens all the time, where children start out caring for their parents in one way, and it's fine. But then after a certain amount of time, it becomes too difficult. Either because sometimes the parents' needs change. Sometimes, again, something with that same caregiver's children change. And suddenly, again, as a parent, my attention is pulled back now to my own. So absolutely, it's not, I'm here right now, I have to make a decision. Am I caring for my parents or am I outsourcing it? You're 1,000% correct.
More so, even when you're outsourcing, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily, as in the example,
running. Uninvolved. 100%. Correct. But the advocacy piece comes after that first fundamental decision. Am I the primary giver or am I not the primary giver? That's the halacha saying. That's the first fundamental. And I want to just point out what's truly, I think, beautiful about this is, and this is general beautiful about halacha and about Torah, it's derecha darcheinam. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. And halacha never wants us to do something that we feel is going to compromise us as human beings. And so the halacha is giving me this incredible ability to say, I can do this, or I can't do this. That's the first decision. So he goes on, he says, now, what I do want to point out is that in the Shulchan Aruch's model, which is a more extreme case, I am literally outsourcing the care to someone else. I give instructions, here's how I want you to go ahead and care for my parents. The Rav Asi case, 100%, is an extreme case of Rav Asi going to Arizona. Now, why Rav Asi had to flee the country, right, as opposed to just outsource his mother's care, I don't know. That I don't know any more about this right now, what's written over here. But there's no question that in terms of how we apply this to ourselves, it could very well be that I feel, you know what, I can't care for my parent in my home. Let me start with the first part is, I feel I can care for my parent in my home. But just understand what comes with that. A person has to be aware and say to themselves, you know what, this is going to be trying, and this is going to be difficult, and this is going to be overwhelming, and the one thing I have to do is I have to mechazik myself that no matter what happens, I will never compromise the dignity of my parent. I will not be disrespectful no matter how demeaning or disrespectful. You know, when a person is in pain, they say a lot of things. And when the parent is the one who gave me life, suddenly becomes like the child, the dependent. We're not even talking about the psychology of that and how overwhelming that is for a parent to suddenly become the dependent. What that means in terms of a loss of a sense of self. What that loss of autonomy, what that loss of independence means. And especially as the parent becomes more dependent. And now I raised this child. I was the mother figure. I was the father figure. And now I totally and wholly rely on them. It's crushing. It's crushing, and even if you're the best child in the world, it's crushing. And even if the parent doesn't articulate it, it's always crushing. Because, you know, the one thing we want more than anything in life is... freedom and independence. You know, the first, most common first word that children utter is no. Right? It's not mommy, it's not daddy, it's no. Now, I'm sure this is because it's monosyllabic. I'm sure there are many reasons. On the ruchni level, you know why the first word we like to say is no? Because what is no? No is a expression of self-autonomy. You're not going to tell me what to do. I'm in a dirty diaper and I can't do anything for myself. No. I need a gather, right? I'm the man. Don't tell me what to do. I got this under control. That's what we want more than anything, is to be in control. And as we get older and we lose more and more control, right? Anyone who's ever been in a situation where you have to take away car keys from elderly, horrible. 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 You would think literally you're pulling the heart out of their chest. Why? Because those car keys, from the time that we turn 16, 17 years old, that's my ticket to freedom. That's my autonomy. Now, I don't have that anymore. And again, as you get older, a lot of times, those symbols, and they're not just symbolic, they're real parts of my personal autonomy, go away. So a parent, if a child's going to care for a parent, and again, I can't point out the incredible zechus, and that's what you have to look at it. If you do have the opportunity to care for a parent, it is nothing short of a privilege. I saw this with my own parents who cared for their parents. And the Mesiras Nefesh that's involved in it, especially when you bring an elderly parent into your home, it's overwhelming. It takes over your entire life. But the Zechus that it is to be able to show, to blanket your parent with love in their final stages of their journey in this world, and that when they leave, they're going to leave in the comfort of your home. They're going to leave surrounded by family. That is an incredible and overwhelming zechus that is absolutely impossible to measure. But it's only a zechus if you feel you could maintain the right disposition to your parents. And if you feel your parent can maintain the right disposition, sometimes parents don't want it. You know, there's another piece to this, which is a parent doesn't want to live with the kid. Right? And ultimately, again, that may be because for a variety of different reasons. And that's incredibly important to take into account as well. But again, so says the Shulchan Aruch, so therefore, again, if I can't do it, I outsource. And if I outsource, I go ahead and give the proper directions ultimately to the caregivers. And as was mentioned, Rav Asi is the extreme example of leaving town. But the truth is there are incredible ways to advocate for an elderly parent, even if they're not actively living with you. And there are incredible ways to be involved, and you have to be involved. Again, a lot of times complicated life situations come out a bit more in end-of-life care as well, where parents and children didn't always get along. Sometimes there's unresolved relationship issues, and those things come out in end-of-life care. The bottom line is relationships are complicated, and those complications become exacerbated and amplified as we grow older and more dependent on one another. But I'm just pointing out over here, and this is the beauty of the halacha, that sometimes we think that the halacha demands of us to go ahead and do anything and everything ourselves for the parent. And all the Shulchan Aruch is telling us is that halacha lamaisa, yes, you have to do everything you can for your parent. Sometimes it's what you yourself are going to do, and sometimes it's making sure that others are going to take care of it. I'll end up, there's an interesting piece in the Nishmas Avraham. The Nishmas Avraham writes as follows. He quotes over here from Shlomo Zalman. I quote you. I thought it's such an interesting piece. And with this I'll conclude. He quotes over here. Sorry. Okay, here it is. He quotes over here from the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer was Rav Eliezer Waldenberg. The Tzitz Eliezer, by the way, is probably was an incredible post-Sikh in Eretz Yisrael. He passed away 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So he's most well-known. Tzitz Eliezer was most well-known because he gave the heter to abort Tay-Sachs pregnancies. He was the one posek who was willing to go on record as saying that a woman is permitted to abort a Tay-Sachs pregnancy. So poskim used to refer shilasim from all over the world in this type of situation. But he was a prolific writer and has volumes upon volumes of shilas and shuvas. So he writes as follows. He discusses, listen to this, he quotes a situation that he got from one of his tamidim. He had a Talmud of his that his mother unfortunately became mentally unhinged. And what happened? Now this is a bit dated. The Talmud wanted to know, could he tie down his mother? Right? Tie down your mother-in-law, that's a different shayla, right? Tie down his mother. Like his mother was literally fit to be tied. In other words, she was ill. She was ill. Now this, by the way, understand, this sounds like a joke, but this comes up all of the time. A parent has a feeding tube, right? Sometimes a parent has to be restrained because they pull out tubes. So the shaila that the Talmud was asking the Tzitz Eliezer, can I restrain my parent? And the Tzitz Eliezer said, no. You have to outsource her care to someone else. If the parent needs to be restrained, a child should not be doing that. Now he writes, if it's b'shas ma'aseh, if it's happening right now, and literally again, there's a concern that the parent is going to hurt themselves or hurt someone else, then of course you do what you have to do to kind of stabilize the situation. But in general, again, if that's the level of care that the parent needs, no, a child should not be restraining their parent. It's not the right thing. For a parent, it's no different than if a parent is incontinent, right? And a parent has to wear diapers or things like that. It shouldn't be a child who's caring for that. That's not the right way. On one end, you could say it's such selfless dedication, but the goal of caring for a parent is that the honor and the dignity of the parent should remain intact with the child. That's the goal of caring for an elderly parent. I should be there, and if I could be there and the parent lives with me and I take care of the parent, fantastic. But I would say even in that type of situation, there come circumstances where you probably have to bring in outside help to be able to go ahead and care for the parent. But again, if the child says, I love my parent, I care for my parent, but I'm scared that if I take on this responsibility wholly and totally, then my relationship with the parent is going to be compromised. My cover for the parent is going to be compromised. The Tzitz Eliezer paskins, as the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that it is okay, not only is it okay, but under certain circumstances, encouraged to outsource the care, proper care. Be an advocate for your parents' care. But it may be that the care occur outside of you. You as the child could be the advocate for the parent, but perhaps not the caregiver for the parent. At the end of the day, the goal is that I should always be mechabed my parents. That's the lodestar, right? That's the guiding light principle. What is going to allow me to honor my parents in the best way? If caring for them myself, in my home, by me, is the best, go for it. You can handle it. Go for it. If that's going to compromise my dignity and my honor towards my parents, my cover toward my parents, or I can't provide them the best care, then ultimately, again, I may have to outsource that care to someone else. I'll just end off with an incredible Abarbanel. The Abarbanel writes that when it comes to honoring parents, the Pasuk says, Kavid azavicha v'asimecha leman ya'arichun yamecha. Honor your father and mother, and I will give you longevity. Says the Abarbanel, why is your longevity associated with caring for parents? He says something amazing. Because sometimes to do the mitzvah of kibud av ve'im correctly takes years off of your life. That sometimes the energy involved in giving proper kavod to a parent, that the energy involved in always talking to a parent in the right way, the energy involved, especially again when a parent becomes fundamentally dependent in advanced illness or sickness, is so profound and takes so much of me that it could literally take away some of my own chiyah, some of my own life. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I promise you, you be there for your parents, and I'll be there for you. Whatever you quote-unquote give to them from yourself, meaning mechabe them, I promise Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I will replenish for you. So hopefully, in the zechus of spending the morning speaking about the obligations that we have towards our children, we should be zocheh amir tzah Hashem, if we're still raising children, to halavai raise inspired, beautiful and halig neshamas. And if we're at the stage where I'm not raising my children, but instead of caring for my parents, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us the wisdom and the fortitude to be able to maintain the proper covet, their proper respect, their proper reverence, and the proper love for our parents. Admeh ve'esim shalom tov.